This is the Past Lives Podcast, episode 211, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Past Lives Podcast is to investigate evidence that demonstrates survival of the human soul. We will look at past life memories, near-death experiences, spirit communication, and other incredible phenomena. This is the free one-hour version of the episode. The extended episode is an hour and 17 minutes. And to get access to the extra 17 minutes and the other extended versions of the episodes, you can join the Past Lives Podcast Patreon campaign. When you sign up for $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. And please check out my other podcast. It's called the Alien UFO Podcast. And I release new episodes every Monday. And you can find it on almost every podcast app. There's also a new $12.50 Patreon tier, where every week you can get the extended episodes of the Past Lives Podcast and the Alien UFO Podcast extended episodes. And there are now 54 extended episodes available in the back catalogue. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. Also, when you book a past life regression hypnosis session with me and you're a patron, you get a 25% discount. And I'm offering a free consultation call which can be booked on my website. All of the extended episodes are ad-free and released 2 days before the normal one-hour version. And please look out for my other podcast episodes. They're called Paranormal Stories, and they're released every Thursday. The links are in the show notes, and you can find the show notes for this and every other episode on my website. And there is a Past Lives Podcast Facebook group, and if you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And if you enjoy this podcast, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. This week I'm talking to Dr. Mark Pitstick about his book, The Afterlife Evidence, Comforting and Convincing Proof That No One Really Dies. Mark has 50 years experience and training in hospitals, pastoral counselling settings, mental health centres and private practice. Mark became aware of clairaudient experiences at age 10 and has since been blessed with numerous miracles, revelatory and spiritually transformative experiences. Hi Mark, thanks a lot for coming back to the podcast.
My pleasure, Simon. Thank you for having me on.
I found your book and read it. It's a fantastic book called The Afterlife Evidence, Comforting and Convincing Proof That No One Really Dies. But before we go into the book, could you share with us, how did this start for you? What put you on the path to look into all this stuff?
Well, the bottom line is I think it's my soul's mission. And, you know, soul is one word to describe who and what we really are. I think I came to this planet with this being my very highest mission, and there's some various evidence for it. Quickly, when I was 6 years old, my parents were showing me a beautiful sunset, and I told them it reminded me of God. And they only told me that 20-some years later when I was in the theology school. They were perplexed at why I would equate the Creator with a sunset, because we were brought up Lutheran. It's always God the Father this, God the Father that. When I was around age 8, I had several really wonderful clairaudient experiences, usually sitting in church, and the minister would be talking about the nature of hell, our eternal place of torment. And this very kind, calm, wise voice or thought in my head said, no, that's, they have that one wrong. God doesn't need such a place in this plan of salvation for all. And I noticed no one else heard, and I had enough wherewithal to be cool about it and say, did anybody else hear that? And same way about the nature of heaven. You know, it's not just golden streets and the playing golden harps. Likewise, one day reminding me that I, like all people, this body will pass. And what was I going to do with my life in the meantime? Was I going to just take up space or make the world a better place? Throughout my early teens, I discovered spontaneously yoga and meditation. My family would watch sitcoms, and it drove me crazy, the canned laughter. So I'd go into a quiet room and just stretch. It felt good. And later on, found out those were long-time yoga postures. Likewise, learned ways to quiet my brain and just go into the zone, whether it's bouncing a rubber ball off of steps and catching it for an hour straight. And and realize where was my mind during that time. You know, it seemed like a minute. Then when I became 19, I started working in hospitals. Simon, as a part-time respiratory therapist, as I worked my way through pre-med and theology school, and worked almost every shift because I was night shift, ERs, ICUs with dying people. And seeing that, especially little children die, sometimes horribly by abuse or being hit by a truck and so on, it brought me to my knees. As I said, brought up Lutheran, the teaching was God was all-knowing, all-loving, all-caring. And so if that's the case, how is it that these little children are dying so, and so many other people are suffering horribly? So that then launched a search, which it'll be 50 years in June, hard to believe. And I started searching then, and I reasoned that the first question was, okay, well, is there really life after death? Or is all this idea of an afterlife and a caring creator and all that just wishful thinking because we can't face the prospects of nothingness? And worked away at it, took conventional transcendental meditation training, yoga training, have done that for nearly 50 years, most of the time. And then just kept adding degrees so I could treat people in body, mind, and spirit. 7 books, 11 audio products, websites, working with the Soul Phone Project. So that's why I am excited about this interview, because we have a chance to share with people some amazing good news. We're really at a historic place for humanity.
When you're in hospital with these dying patients, did you experience anything yourself? Did they have deathbed visions? Did you see anything yourself, like shared death experiences?
That's a great question, and you realize nobody even knew about that back then. I was a maverick at the time because I was in theology school. I was reading Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and Herman Feifel and other thanatologists, but I was considered a kook. So during resuscitations, what we call code 4, the person's clinically dead, we're trying to revive them. And once I had an airway established and ventilator or bagging for the ventilation, my job was pretty easy. So I would talk loudly in the person's ears because I was aware that hearing was the last sense to go. And doctors and nurses would look at me like, who's this guy? What's he doing? Because this wasn't part of the thinking of it at that time. But on 2 instances, I did see a faint white light, almost like a cloud, arise from the patient's chest. And each time that happened, the doctor called time of death right after that. And the other thing I experienced was because I had been learning, of course, Dr. Raymond Moody's book came out in 1975, and I worked in hospitals from 1972 to 78. And of course, his book, Life After Life, just fascinating. And when we would successfully code someone, I had a chance to interview them. I'd follow up. They'd be on a ventilator. They'd be on oxygen. I'd say, hey, I'm just curious. I would leave open-ended questions. Did you experience anything interesting while you were being worked on? And several people did experience. And then the last thing I would say is, on 3, as I think about it, there are a lot of really cool things. Life is so fascinating when we remain awake and aware. It's just so full. On 3 times, I was checking the oxygen on very elderly women, but they were quite lucid, talkative, and so on. And each time, the person say, I don't know why I'm telling you, but there's something about you. I'm a 19-year-old kid. And they said, last night my husband stood at the foot of my bed and he looked so happy and healthy. Now I'm getting teared up about it, which tells me it's of spirit. And he said we would see each other soon, and they were all excited. And these people were not terminal by any means. They were expected to recover. And the next day I go to check their oxygen and they had expired in the 24 hours since. So that was a head scratch. And then the last thing I would share is that on 2 occasions, we had very comatose patients in vegetative states, and that at that time insurance didn't rule patient care like it does now, at least in the U.S. And these people, there was almost no sign of visitors, cards, flowers. They were just, you know, vegetables. And we treated them almost constantly to try to prevent them from dying from pneumonia. Why is a good question. And so after reading all this, you know, authors I mentioned, as well as Ram Dass and other spiritual teachers, I just said into their ear, hey, if you want to keep living like this, we'll keep working on you as much and hard as we can. However, if you're glimpsing other possibilities, you might want to look around you, trust God, look for the light. You may have angels, you may have loved ones who are coming to escort you home, and don't be afraid. You know, there's so much more than this earthly body. And in both instances, the people passed on, but then 24 hours again. But at that time, there was a phantom snuffer. I turned out to be a nurse in a city not too far from us, who was putting a pillow over people, terminal patients' faces, and killing them. And so I thought, you know, I probably shouldn't do this one anymore. So those are some of my experiences, Simon.
It's interesting you say that part of the thinking when you were doing those things was that you were like a bit of a kook and that you shouldn't be talking into people's ears. And do you feel that nowadays in hospitals there's a different attitude and that they're more spiritually oriented?
There is somewhat, and especially in the larger, more progressive hospitals in more culturally advanced cities. And yes, pastoral counselors involved in that. Nurses especially. I learned early on that nurses are the ones that make things happen. I mean, they are God's hands on earth. I can't say too much good about them. And they are the ones who started behind the scenes. Well, healing touch, for example, you know, very much involving nurses. And now, yes, at the forefront of providing more holistic care. And of course, now we have hospice centers. So it's a quite different environment, but we still have a long way to go. Here's an interesting, Ram Dass and some others started a Center for Conscious Dying. I think it was in New Mexico, and this was in the 70s, where people who are terminally ill could go and be surrounded by conscious beings who knew that death was not an end, wonderful music, healthy food, art, discussions. I think there might have been a little LSD involved back then. And he said, but the trouble was nobody wanted to die. It's just incredibly funny. I think humanity is ready for that, as well as providing a good death for people. You know, people who have reached terminal state, I mean, look at it. We treat our dogs and cats better than humans. You know, dog and cat obviously has lost dignity and no prospect for improvement. They get a shot, they get a pill, they're going peacefully to the next stage of life. Humans don't. And I discuss this in my article on soulproof.com called A Good Death. And unfortunately, it's mainly economic factors for keeping people living so far beyond any state of really living.
So you and Dr. Schwartz and your team are working on something quite big. But before we go into that, can you tell us who Dr. Schwartz is and the team?
Yes, he's a genius. We're blessed to have him on Earth. Dr. Schwartz got his undergrad in Cornell, some electrical engineering training, some psychology, master's from Harvard, clinical psychology, PhD at Harvard, psychophysiology, which is looking at the mind-body connection. He was courted by Yale and started the first body-mind center there. In fact, was one of a handful of people to start the field of behavioral medicine, which is just incredible. Jonas Salk, inventor of the legendary medical doctor, wanted Dr. Schwartz to direct a center for conscious living, but Dr. Salk passed on. So anyway, Dr. Schwartz, just this amazing guy at the time, he had two near-death experiences when he was a child, and I think that opened his control valve a bit so that he wasn't, the sensory input wasn't as filtered out as it is for most of us. You understand that 95% of what the central nervous system does is filter out what is there, sounds and sights and so on, because they can interfere with functioning properly on Earth. Well, his he was able to grasp more, think more, plus he was raised by brilliant parents. His dad was a PhD chemist from Columbia, his mom a Juilliard trained musician and teacher, and they encouraged his experimentations. So he had a breakthrough vision when he was in a penthouse by himself, top of this large building, and he's a Yale professor, and he saw starlight coming to him, and he also saw light from other lights, and he could see people in the distance in other rooms, and it hit him that light, energy, photons travels infinitely through time. And that was one way to look at who we are, you know, beings of light, energy, consciousness. And so that opened his mind then to the possibility of survival of consciousness after bodily death. Neither Harvard nor Yale was poised at the time to do that kind of research. So he went to the University of Arizona. So now we're 1988 and began pioneering studies, exploring mediums. He reasoned that if indeed there is life after death, then there should be some people who can communicate with them, and indeed found about 20 top-notch mediums who, under very highly controlled conditions, had something like an 87% success rate in providing specific details from what we call post-material persons, those who have passed on, compared to 23% for the control group. Well, then, as a result of this research, some of these mediums became colleagues and developed a relationship, and a number of them independently said, Dr. Schwartz, we keep hearing from Albert Einstein and others, Nikola Tesla, et cetera, Edison, they want you to build technology so we can communicate at a much higher level of quality and quantity of information sharing. And he was like, okay, how do you do that? Anyway, 15 years later, seven different devices that measured the density, the visual aspects, the sound, the light, the ability to make air motion in an airtight chamber, etc. These are all proof of concept studies. It shows that, yeah, it looks like life continues after bodily death, but none of them were considered commercializable. None of them could be miniaturized and have a cost point to provide widespread communication technology or at least services for people around the world, which was his goal. So now he and his team of electrical engineers are working on what's called the soul switch, and I realized I've already segued from Dr. Schwartz to the project.
Hello, listeners, this is Simon. Now, as some of you know, I have a diploma in clinical hypnotherapy, and I'm certified in past life regression therapy. And in the past few weeks, I've taken many clients through some amazing and healing past life regressions. And I conduct sessions over Zoom, and I've had clients from many countries around the world. Now, when you go through a past life regression, you will feel totally in control and remember everything. And also, I record the whole session and send you an MP3 afterwards. And this gives you space to relax and go with the flow, knowing that you can listen back later and analyze what you experienced if you need to. So if you ever wanted to explore your past lives in a single session or have an issue you want to work on, you can go to my website at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk and book a free 20-minute consultation. And at the moment, I'm offering a 25% discount to everyone that has signed up to the Patreon campaign. The link is in the show notes. Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you about, the Solphone project. It looks fascinating.
Yeah, it provides so much hope. And lately I've started using this way of looking at it. I don't know if you've ever been seriously injured or near death or anything, but if you were and someone came up to you and said, "Hold on, help is on the way," think how wonderful it would be to hear those words. Well, likewise, one just needs to watch the news or read the paper to see just all the levels of dysfunction and problems people are going through. And by the way, I send out special prayers to those in Ukraine, other war-torn areas, and encouragement to leaders who can make a difference and find peaceful solutions. So sometimes it seems hopeless, and suicide rates are soaring, and drug use, and, in the U.S., medical marijuana. So now lots of people, need to have that to function, and it's just becoming this giant mess. And it can be so much better than that. So, yeah, the Solphone Project brings so much hope, inspiration, comfort to the game. So briefly, and it's a huge topic for your listeners, they can visit solphone.com to learn more. Dr. Schwartz directs the Laboratory for Advances in Consciousness and Health at the University of Arizona in Tucson. And he has a team of electrical engineers, just genius people, especially who specialize in what is called signal-to-noise ratio problems, because the signal from these people who live in another dimension, realm, plane of consciousness, however you want to term it, is relatively weak as measurable by our current technology. And so these sensors, these devices that pick up their presence, their signal with the soul switch, a simple yes or no, also pick up everything else, 60 hertz, 110 outlet noise, fluorescent light, cell tower emanations, so much on the spectrum of electromagnetic frequencies. So the trick is to minimize the background noise and maximize the signal of these spirits in whatever way we're trying to measure them. And it's a real trick, and that's why, nobody's been able to do it to date. By the way, quick sidebar, the four legendary communication technology people in the 1900s did try. Nikola Tesla, Thomas Edison, Alexander Graham Bell, and Guglielmo Marconi, a inventor of the radio. So it's been an idea among brilliant minds for so long, but we just now have the sufficient software technology, computer technology, instrumentation, et cetera, to make it happen. So Dr. Schwartz also has the, in addition to these earthbound helpers, he has what we call the A-Team, which is a group of 30 or so post-material luminaries. So again, people who lived on Earth, their physical bodies died, but everything else about them is alive and well in another realm. They've continued, as much as we can gather, to work on their particular areas of expertise. So again, we're talking Einstein, Edison, Carl Sagan, et cetera, that level of people who want to help us heal our world, want to help us and stand ready. But right now our communication is limited, but we're working on that. It could be any week where we have a breakthrough soul switch, which is defined as a 99.9% accurate yes or no answer in 10 seconds or less, which is close enough to real time, that then a series of these switches, and the first key soul keyboard could be the size of a dinner table, but who cares, would allow then texting and typing. And then that's when we'll be able to get the information that these legendary scientists and inventors want to share with us to move toward then the two most useful devices, soul audio, being able to talk like we're doing now, and then soul video, like video conferencing with Zoom or Skype.
And there have been examples of communication through technology, hasn't there? And in your book, there's an example. Was it your friends Dottie and Joe Asselin? They received some kind of tax code?
Yeah, and those are considered after-death communications, ADCs for short. Yeah, it's a wonderful story. These are two so evolved and advanced people, and they had for 25 years what's called Soul Seeing, Sand, Sea, and Spirit in Gulf Shores, Alabama, a wonderful group of 300 or so people come together. We had an entire building and just a full week of learning and laughing and love and, you know, campfires at night on the beach with Native American rituals. It was just so wonderful. So many people just blossomed from that, including me. Well, Joe was a electrical engineer, and Dottie had been able to see energy and auras her whole life. I consider them my spiritual parents. And Joe was close to passing on. He had absolutely no fear. And he said, Dottie, I've prepared our taxes for next year. If I do pass on before they're due, here's the code. They were using TurboTax. And so she filed it away, but indeed over the next few months he did. And all the, you know, changes that occur after a dear one passes, when it came time for the taxes, she couldn't find the code. So she was with her daughter, Sue, who is a physician, hospital administrator. And they say, oh my God, well, I guess we'll have to start from scratch. And the prospect of that was horrible. So she just said in her prayers, okay, Joe, you know, we could use some help here, because they were so aware that, you know, they were still both present, that love and life continue. Well, the next morning, she checked her, when she looked at her phone, there was a text from Joe Asland and said, the TurboTax code is this. She ran over, woke up Sue, they wrote it down and entered it, and everything opened, and there were the taxes, just what they needed. When Dottie looked at the phone again, there was no record of having received that text. So this is an example of electronic ADC after-death communication. These are spontaneous. They're wonderful when they happen. Dr. Raymond Moody said about 30% of average people, 66% of widows and widowers have had one or more meaningful experiences like this while awake or asleep, and about 75% of bereaved parents. However, I've worked with thousands of bereaved parents, mainly through the group Helping Parents Heal. And when I do informal surveys, almost all hands go up. So contact is being made. But as I say, it's spontaneous. There are ways to facilitate that, to increase the chances of a meaningful visit. And I discuss those in my article number 9 at soulproof.com. However, the goal of the Soul Phone project, these various devices, is to provide safe, secure, accurate, reliable communication, just like our smart devices allow now with people on Earth.
You talk about greater reality and greater reality living. Could you describe those for us?
Yes, this is now moving into the, all right, we have what we call definitive demonstration scientifically that life continues after bodily death. And with all the clinical evidence, you mentioned one before, shared death experiences, near-death experiences, life between life sessions, Dr. Newton, etc. There are 7 of those. All of that evidence, as well as many firsthand experiences under which ADCs fall, show without a doubt now, Dr. Schwartz says, as a scientist, he is 99.9% sure that life continues after bodily death. Well, that's as high as a real scientist will ever state, that degree of certainty. So now we have we have established, and by the way, after we have multi-center studies and the breakthrough switch, he will say, yeah, 100%, you know, scientifically proven, but we're not quite there yet. So given that, then the question arises, all right, what's, you know, how can we look at life differently? And one is to realize just how vast life is. And Dr. Schwartz and I wrote a book called Greater Reality Living a couple years ago to educate people more about this and prepare people for the paradigm shift that's going to accompany official announcements of scientific proof of life after death, as well as public demonstrations of the soul phone technology. So the term greater reality is a way to describe all that exists, the totality of life. And as I mentioned, the average human perceives much less than 1% of reality. One metaphor for this, or a way to describe it, is from Lynn McTaggart's book, The Field, in which she surveyed top quantum physicists around the world. And they agreed that if all the light and energy that exists in our world, and that's the most fundamental description of really what we are, beings of light, energy, consciousness. You know, we appear solid and separate, but that's an optical delusion because of our limited senses and brain. So if all the light and energy that exists in our world were the size of Mount Everest, the portion the average human can perceive would be the size of a golf ball. So that alone explains so many things. It's as though most people walk around looking through a tiny pinhole and wondering why life doesn't make sense, why it seems cruel, random, unfair, God, if there is one, you know, is asleep at the wheel, etc. When in fact, if we could open that view of reality, even to the size of a silver dollar, we would see so much more. And the term greater reality living is our way of inviting people to consider, okay, now we know how vast life is, and all the great news, which we can talk about later, but one is that we each are one with the one, an integral part of source energy. We're not separate. So now that we know life after death, we don't really lose our loved ones, all the 12 points, the great news, how will people choose to live? And we don't pretend to know what it'll be like because everyone's unique and special, but we do know from near-death experiences and other spiritually transformative experiences that commonly there are profound and lasting shifts in more love, more service, more altruism, less excessive focus on materialism. People who have addictions and imbalances, to whether it's alcohol, drugs, sex, etc., those just drop away, which clinically is fascinating. And those improvements often last over 10, 20 years. These have been tracked, especially by those in the NDE field. So that's greater reality living. How will we live differently? You know, will we watch 6 hours of TV a day, which the average American apparently does? Or will we enjoy life in other ways? Will we remember more who we are, why we're here, who walks beside us always, and live with joy and peace and brighten the corner where we are? And our vision is that as that happens, especially with the 15%ers, and I'll get back to that definition in a moment, we actually have a shot now at creating peace on earth. But that's not going to happen with everybody. I mean, some people are, you know, totally asleep and ignorant and so imbalanced. You know, we're not going for those folks, but we're going for those who are more awakened, enlightened, especially if had different personal experiences. The term 15%ers, Simon, refers to, there are several different measures of this. One is from Dr. Michael Newton, founder of Life Between Lives Therapy. But there are several measures that suggest that about 12% of the people on Earth right now are what are called intermediate souls, which means this has to do with their energy development, not how long they've been a soul or, you know, been around the block. And then 2 or 3% advanced. So the 85% of beginner souls, we may or may not reach them. But sometimes people do have profound awakenings. But if we can get even 10% of the 15%ers, awaken, remembering why we're here, have them share their greatest gifts. We really have a chance of reaching that 100th monkey, the tipping phenomena, and creating, making this world what it can be. It's such a beautiful, pristine place. It's just a few clicks to making that happen. So super exciting and a practical reality based on everything we're talking about. You know, it's not pie in the sky wishful thinking.
And you say that only 20% of who we really are is manifesting on Earth. So what is the evidence you have for this, and how can this knowledge benefit us?
I first became aware of this through my Native American teaching friends. Native Americans had so much, such an advanced cosmology, and other cultures as well recognized they reflected in their art that, for example, you would see the profile of a brave, and then above his head, a grizzly bear, and then an eagle, and then pine trees, and then mountains, and then the moon and the stars. And when I saw this, the teacher was kind of smiling, watching me take all this in. He said, "So what do you think that's portraying?" I said, "Well, that we each are much more than we think, and who we are can express through various levels of manifestation." He said, "That's right." So these different cultures knew that on a clinical front. And I mentioned Michael Newton. He's just author of Life Between Destiny of Souls and Journey of Souls. Just such a great mind. And I'm in touch with his clinical director of research now, Dr. Newton has changed worlds. And they just learned so much about the really real place, you know, where we are before we visit a place like Earth. And then the last research that suggests this, and we'll make this more clear what we're talking about in a moment, comes from David Deutsch, a PhD at Oxford, who coined the term multiverses in the 80s and has good theoretical mathematical models that indeed not all of our soul's energy is in this one earthly place and time, you know, in this body, and that each time we reach a big fork in the road, part of our consciousness, who we are, energy, awareness, may take each fork and explore that. So as you say, the thinking is that on average about 20% of the totality of who we are manifests on Earth. The 80% can be experiencing the field of all possibilities as an animal, as a plant, in formed or formless ways, and part of it may never leave home, may be merged with the one and enjoying unity of consciousness. This idea is tremendously comforting for people who are grieving. As I say, hey, I know it's tough, but there is a very good chance that right now, another part of you and your child or your spouse or whoever's changed worlds are together looking down on you, sending you energy to remember, to wake up, to see the big picture of life, the greater reality, and find the blessings to this.
There's something I read about in your book that I haven't really heard about before. Is psychomantium mirror gazing? Is this something that really works? Because it seems so odd.
It does. This, again, Dr. Raymond Moody, one of my mentors, and such a genius, such a wonderful person. In the year 2000, I spent a week with him and a small group of people and got certified in. Dr. Moody, in addition to being a medical doctor, psychiatrist, had a PhD in Greek history. And so he was aware that the Temple of Delphos, for example, involved in part a journey through subterranean caverns and then culminating in a large open space with just the right lighting and a huge vat, cauldron of pure oil in which people could look into this oil, this transparent surface, and sometimes see loved ones who had passed on. And so that's the term mirror gaze, and then set up the right conditions. And by the way, my fiance and I were just watching Tyler Henry show on Netflix last evening, and he had built a psychomant in his home as a way to prepare him for his mediumistic readings. So yeah, it's available. However, I ran some group sessions, but it's a lot of work to set up just the right conditions, and I didn't consider it something that was really that useful for mass benefit. And that's why I created what's called the facilitated ADC, after-death communication technique, again, described in article number 9 at soulproof.com. And so I've created audio products. It only costs $15 that people can use, where I take them through deep relaxation, really hypnosis, guided imagery. And about 75% of people who use this report the very first time having a meaningful experience, hearing, seeing, feeling a loved one who's living in the next phase of forever.
And with the psychomantium mirror gazing, that's when you sit in front of a mirror and you just gaze into it. And is it with a sort of meditation technique of clearing your mind?
Well, the meditation technique isn't so much needed. What is the correct environment. So a blackened condition where the person sits, just a very soft light behind them and the mirror at a right angle. So the people are looking in the mirror in such a way that they don't see themselves. And with just a little light, and yeah, you sit there and breathe and relax for a while. Sometimes, indeed, you'll see a loved one in the mirror, or sometimes it sets the stage for sensing them in another place. For example, I gave a session. There were three of us in the booth at a consciousness center many years ago, and we met beforehand, and we purposely did not share who we hoped to contact. One woman's name was Mary, and the other was Catherine. And so I had set up the area. We were all sitting about 7 feet apart. And so I'm sitting there for a while looking at my mirror, like, okay, is anything going to happen? And all of a sudden, a outline of a woman started forming, kind of like if you watch Star Trek and other shows, you know, how they beam me up, they'll materialize a little bit slowly over time. And so here's the outline of this woman with long dark hair. And so I telepathically asked, who are you here to contact? And they said, actually it was Chris and Catherine. And they said, Chris. And my analytical mind said, well, that's not very impressive. You know, there's only two of us in here. I don't acquaint with this person. And so that's a 50-50 chance. Well, just then a moderate, forceful tap touched me on my left shoulder. And I could see from my peripheral vision the other two were in their seats. That's when, if I had any hair on my head, it would have been standing up, goosebumps, and so on. And the voice came in, okay, well, did you make that up? And then a little bit later, another tap in the middle of my back. And so that definitely got my attention. Anyway, long story short, from this person conveyed, I said, well, who, what names do you go by? And they said, Mary and Margaret. And after the session, I said, okay, what I got was for Chris that Mary and Margaret came through, and she started crying immediately. And she said, that's the name of my mom and grandma, and that's who I hoped would show up. So amazing. I hope centers develop in every town for it in the future. It's just one of a growing number of ways to know that life continues, and you know, we can relax, we can enjoy this earthly experience.
And these sort of stories that you're telling are so important. And there's so many people that listen to my podcast for reasons they might be grieving, they might have a real fear of death, they might be just fascinated by it. And hearing these things can really change, can't it? Particularly people who are grieving. And This is so important to get out there. What sorts of things have you done working with grieving parents and people?
Well, much, and partly it's education, you know, telling them about the evidence for life after death and the book you've been reviewing, the afterlife evidence. Partly it is helping them understand the big picture of life. For example, I write a Q&A for the newsletter for Helping Parents Heal, and the title is Evolved Souls Don't Need Long Earthly Lives. So there's a good chance that these little ones whose bodies die, excuse me, and I use that rather cumbersome way of describing it, but the children didn't die, just their earth suits did. And there's a huge difference. So it's important to remember that even though they are children in earth years, they could be the most evolved souls. And parents who get that, it's like, oh my God, I was blessed to have this kind of like an angel in our home for 10 years, and focus on appreciation, gratitude for that. Know they'll see each other again. Look for the silver lining. Say, okay, I'm going to honor my child's passing. And some of the most evolved people I know are bereaved parents who have made the journey to what we call shining light parents. They know their children are living in a realm dominated by higher energies, peace, love, joy, gratitude, enthusiasm, enlightenment. And these parents strive to do the same so they can be more on the same wavelength and perceive their child's real presence, as well as fulfill the lessons that they and their children likely pre-planned. One dad had a tattoo. He said, I bought the ticket. I'm getting emotional thinking about this one. It's so powerful, though. I bought the ticket. I'm going to take the ride. So his son Devin passed, and he's like, okay, I went through the pain and suffering. I'm going to find the blessings, because they're always there. It's just ancient cultures recognize that. Egyptian and Chinese, the word crisis also meant simultaneously opportunity.
And do you feel that in some way parents may have had some kind of mediumship ability that gets kind of switched on when their children pass? It's like the veil is thinner for them.
Interesting way you put that. Thank you. I think we all have abilities to sense more of the greater reality. And when we go through a big crisis, and there's a whole list of events that can trigger a spiritually transformative experience, STE, childbirth, the passing of a child, being in violent situations, almost dying, a near-death experience, making love, hearing beautiful notes of music. It reminds me of the saying, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. So in my experience, and I've worked with tens and tens of thousands of people over the years, just about any stimulus can help, especially those that quiet the brain, that turn off that constant judging and evaluation that only what you can see, hear, and feel is really real. Everything else is illusory or, quote, spiritual. And realizing, no, it's all of life. And if you can extend your senses just a little, and that's one of the many values of regular meditation, yoga, time in nature, prayer, etc., then you can begin to sense more. People like William Blake saying, see the world in a grain of sand. Another saying he had just blew my mind. It served as the book title, Doors of Perception by Aldous Huxley. Blake said, if we could see life as it truly, if the doors of perception were cleansed, we could see life as it truly is, infinite. So the wise person takes some time, energy, and money to then identify, what is this earthly experience about, and how can I optimally live while I'm here? And then that's when we convert what seems to be a horrible, senseless experience to this wonderful journey. And again, knowing it only lasts a blink of an eye, and quite probably only part of our energy is in this experience, and it makes it a lot easier. It's an adventure, and that's what Joseph Campbell, you know, tried to teach in his wonderful teachings, that we're having the hero's journey. So are we going to remember we're heroes and have a breakthrough instead of a breakdown?
So what is the life's formula that was, I think it was endorsed by Albert Einstein?
It was, and what a story. So first of all, the LIFE formula is what Dr. Schwartz and I, we love acronyms, and worked up as a way to help people remember five steps to remembering all this that we've been talking about. And the L stands for learn the evidence of afterlife and learn the evidence that supports what we call the great news. Those 12 points. The I stands for internalize this great news. In other words, not just have a dry, superficial, intellectual knowing, but a deep, internalized knowing that gets you through the day, especially when we go through life's inevitable changes and challenges. The V stands for vitalize yourself holistically, so you have enough energy and vitality to meet life's daily demands and have some left over to brighten the corner where you are to fulfill your missions. The E, enjoy the many benefits of all this. And S, serve others and yourself and make the world a better place. So several years ago, I was able to meet with the head research medium for the Soul Phone Project. I had put in at that point, I think about 3 years, working about 60 hours a week, unpaid. And so they said, gosh, you know, we really appreciate it. Would you like to have a sitting with some of the A-team members? I said, of course. So I knew about it a few weeks ahead, and they said, well, come up with a few questions you would like to ask them, because even to now, most of the interactions with these luminaries has been on technological development, not asking them questions about the nature of reality and the afterlife and so on, because we, you know, we need to get this device first. So I had thought about it, and my first question was, and the post-material luminaries who are purportedly present, because speaking in scientific terms, I can't say absolutely they were, but a high degree of certainty they were Albert Einstein, David Bohm, who is a Princeton quantum physicist and a colleague of Einstein's, Thomas Edison, Carl Sagan, and Michael Jackson. And so I asked the question, how can we achieve world peace? And Einstein took the lead and said, well, that's a tough one. He said, I noticed things are no better now than when I was on Earth. He said, all I can say is that many people as possible get in touch with their gifts, their blessings, you know, what energizes them, and share that. And over time, that can make a big difference. So I said, okay, thanks. But really, inside, I was a little disappointed. Come on, you're Albert Einstein, you know, and you're enjoying a relatively unobstructed view of life right now. I was expecting a little more, but I moved on to the next question, which was, all right, Dr. Schwartz and I are about to publish our book, Greater Reality Living. Are we missing anything? And the medium said, well, Mark, even though we're working with the team every day, it's all about technology, that, you know, you can't assume that they understand what's in the book. And so can you give them an overview? So I did. I described the LIFE formula as I just did a moment ago. And as soon as I described those five keys, Albert Einstein shouted through this medium, that's it. You just answered your first question. And it took me a moment to realize, oh my God, he's saying, how can we achieve world peace? The LIFE formula is sufficient. And he and Bohm then went on to say, yes, the formula that you just proposed is entirely sufficient and able to awaken a sufficient number of people to achieve peace on Earth. Further, they said, she said, I'm seeing water running off a duck's back. And she said, oh, they're trying to tell me you will be criticized, especially by closed-minded skeptics and uninformed people, atheists, etc. But don't be deterred by it. Just let it go by you like water off a duck's back. And they said, share this with as many people as well and as fast as you can. So we consider that a potential interdimensional endorsement of our book and also this formula.
And talking about skeptics, you must have considered that perhaps there are all sorts of people who would be against it or might even try to block you. Maybe religious people who might say that, well, you're just communicating with demons. It's not actually who you say it is.
Exactly. And again, there's a difference between the 85% and 15%. So we're not going to waste our time or breath dealing with religious fundamentalists of any religion or closed-minded, very conservative people. You know, it's not worth the time. So we're just trying to reach the people who are open-minded. It's okay to be skeptics. I mean, we're skeptics. That the original meaning of the word in Greek was those who evaluate all the existing evidence before making a conclusion. And that is very wise. So we're open-minded skeptics. So those are the people we're trying to reach. You know, Margaret Mead, the legendary anthropologist, had a quote, and I'm paraphrasing. She said, do not be concerned that only a small group is attempting to make change, because indeed that's all that ever has worked. And so if we just get a relatively small group, but people pitch in, all hands on deck, who understand this vision, see the practicality of it, and then do their part, we can make a profound change. The other thing I would say about that, Simon, is that we have been busy over the last few years creating an infrastructure before official university announcements, press conferences, and all that. Dr. Schwartz wrote a book with attorney Alan Borey called The Case for Truth. And then Dr. Schwartz also wrote a book, Extraordinary Claims Require Extraordinary Evidence, which is a quote from Carl Sagan. And so in both cases, it explained how you can, with a very high degree of probability, discern falsehoods from what is most probably true. And so those who are skeptics and just say out of hand, oh, this is baloney, this is fake, this is false, they're, okay, well, you know, read the book and look at the evidence. I mean, all the peer-reviewed scientific journal papers, all the data. We have 1 trillion data points, a series of 7 experiments. You know, so for someone to discount all that, it's just patently ignorant.
And can you tell us about soulproof.com and everything that's available there?
Yes, I created that website to help people learn, because I understand this is a learning curve, but it's so much worth the time and energy and a little bit of money. So start with the free products, which I have 104 articles now. Some of the articles, 25 or more pages, for example, the pre-birth planning one of the most difficult articles I have written. I contacted 10 different experts in consciousness, and I got 10 different opinions. So kind of tricky to come up with medium ground there. So all these free articles, also at the top, radio shows, and I think there's 25 free radio shows I did, because I was a host of 2 different shows, Solutions, Ask the Soul Doctors, and just wonderful interviews with some people who have passed now, Wayne Dyer and Michael Newton, others who haven't, Brian Wise, Raymond Moody, Stan Groff, and others, talking about these existential questions. Who am I? Why am I here? Why is there so much suffering, etc. Also free newsletters, both at soulproof.com and a different one at soulphone.com about the Soul Phone Project. Then there are the products that cost, but again, they're so reasonably priced, $15 for an audio product that if you went to a clinician's office would cost about $200. So the idea is to provide lots and lots of information, resources to help as many people who are ready awaken and start doing their part and start enjoying the greatest life of their dreams. You know, some people, so many people are, they're just bored because they're not living a purpose-driven life. And so they get sidetracked, they major in minors, they're depressed. When in fact, when you awaken, when you're doing what you came here to do, you experience that peace that passes all understanding, that joy that we all seek, but some people seeking in the wrong way.
I contacted you because I have the book, The Afterlife Evidence, which is a comforting and convincing proof that no one really dies. And can you tell us of your other books?
Well, there are seven now. Starting from the beginning, Radiant Wellness, which is seven keys to optimal body, mind, spirit wellness. And as I mentioned in the Elias formula, that's a real key because it's very difficult to remember who you are and do what you came here to do if you're depressed, overweight, fatigue, anxiety attacks, etc., which so many people suffer with these days. And there are concrete reasons why. And so if people will just do some basic self-care and natural care products, practices make such a difference in the quality of their lives. Then Soul Proof, I wrote around 2000, which was nine categories of evidence that we are eternal beings, and then nine benefits that accompany all those levels of knowing. I can't believe I've written all these books. With Dr. Schwartz, I mentioned we wrote Greater Reality Living. I wrote, it's called the 11 Questions, which actually are the transcripts of the radio shows I did with 11 different experts talking about understandings of life, death, and afterlife. Then Dr. Schwartz and I wrote with Kata Mapes, who has a dual master's in childhood education and counseling, the book for young people called The Big Picture of Life. And our target group was age 10 to 16. But it turns out that a lot of adults get that more than Greater Reality Living. So The Big Picture of Life. Then the one you mentioned, The Afterlife Evidence. And then one that just went to the publisher called Ask the Soul Doctor, which is a book I've wanted to write for years. I just didn't have the time, which includes my answers to, I think, 140 questions that I've been asked repeatedly by people around the world over the last 30 years and my understandings about that. So those are the seven books.
Well, it's been great talking to you, and it's kind of you to give us your time and come on the podcast.
Well, kudos for you for what you're doing, Simon, and it's an honor to share with your listeners. So I hope people appreciate what you're doing, the level of service you're providing. Thanks again.
Thanks a lot. And that was an interview with Dr. Mark Bidstick about his book, The Afterlife Evidence, Comforting and Convincing Proof That No One Really Dies. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast or click on the button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. This is the free 1 hour version of the episode. The extended episode is 1 hour and 17 minutes. If you join the $2 a month tier, you get an extended episode every month. And if you join the $5 a month tier, you'll have access to an extended episode every week and the back catalogue of extended episodes. And also, if you're a patron, you get a 25% discount when you book a past life regression session with me. And please check out my other podcast. It's called the Alien UFO Podcast, and I release new episodes every Monday. And you can find that on almost every podcast app. My Instagram is the Past Lives Podcast with an underscore between each word. And on Twitter, I am at Simon G. Bowne. And there is a Past Lives Podcast Facebook group. And if you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And please look out for the episodes that are released on Thursdays called Paranormal Stories. And if you enjoy this podcast, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.